I wasn't sure you were in Canada, but now that I hear you speak, I'm sure you're in Canada.
Hello, welcome to Show Me Your Mic, the podcast about podcasting. You can find it online at goodstuff.fm/smym, on Twitter at smym_fm. I'm your host, Chris Enns. For this episode, I've got Jared and Shane, two of the co-hosts of The Scope Show, a comedic discussion of pop culture and current news. They've been recording The Scope Show since 2006, which is a long time in podcast years. We talk about the benefits of recording in the same room as your co-hosts, using YouTube and other platforms for promotion. Of course, we geek out on the gear. My thanks to Campaign Monitor and Mandrill for sponsoring this episode of Show Me Your Mic. More about them a little later on in the show. For now, I'll pause slowly. Okay, enjoy my conversation, Jared and Shane. All right, so welcome to Show Me Your Mic, Jared and Shane from The Scope Show.
Hello.
Thank you.
So, great to be here. Just for the audience who's listening who can't see you, and nor can I, obviously, or not obviously, but I don't record with the video feed on Skype because it's on a little Mac Mini that has no camera, and it would be kind of pointless to have it running. But which one of you is Jared and which one of you is Shane?
I'm Jared.
And I'm Shane.
All right. And you guys are actually recording. I think this is another first, I think, where you guys are actually recording in the same room, on sending one Skype feed to me from a mixer, I'm assuming, which we'll get into and all that kind of stuff. Correct?
Yep, that is correct.
Cool. I've been thinking actually this last week about wanting to find somebody locally who'd want to do a podcast. And because every other podcast I do is either, well, is all either solo or just over Skype. And aside from occasionally bringing my wife in on a podcast, I do more or less. I don't ever actually see the person I'm talking to, which is normal for most podcasters, I think, these days. But I'm sure it is a fun dynamic to have for a show, and we'll get into that. So you guys are, The Scope Show is now 192 episodes, if I'm counting right?
Yes. Due to add to that number this weekend.
Absolutely.
Right. So as somebody may listen, that number should auto-update as you listen. You've been doing the show since 2006, if the archives are correct on the scopeshow.com is where folks can find it, first of all, I guess. But since 2006, which is way before, well, it's a long time ago. That's 8 years.
It is a long time ago. Yeah. You'd think we'd be the number one podcast by now.
Yeah. All of our plans not coming to fruition. What's going on here?
So talk to me a bit about going way back to 2006. Was that your first foray? I don't know who started it and who wants to admit to starting it. What got you into podcasting initially, and then where did The Scope Show come out of that?
I think pretty much I was the first of us who was listening to podcasts, and it's like a lot of people who started back in the day. It was Adam Curry and Daily Source Code was one of the early ones that I listened to. I'm trying to think what else I was listening to back in those days, but Shane had a birthday party. I forget what milestone it was marking, but we did sort of an 80s themed party, and there was a game show that we did.
Yeah, we didn't want it to be a small event. And so Jared and I, we've known each other for a long time, and we sort of, I don't know, we interact on a friendship level, but there's also this weird creative vibe, I would say, that we're always talking about things that we could do and ideas. And, you know, pre-podcasting, we talked about doing websites and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But this time around, we actually did, we accomplished something, and we created like this little game show that it was all 80s based. We really wanted the party to be this interactive thing.
So it was live in the room, and we actually had buzzers. And the part that kind of gets us into the podcasting realm is that I did a whole multimedia part where I played videos and sound effects and was doing kind of a live announce in and out of rounds and stuff like that. And so it sort of, I don't know, it sparked a little bit of inspiration that maybe we could somehow put this together as a show. And I'd always thought, like, wow, this podcasting thing is really neat. Anyone can do it. If I just had an idea, and that sort of got the ball rolling.
Nice. And so then I'm assuming you're probably using different stuff now, but like what kind of gear and stuff did you start out with way back then? Was it just tin cans, I'm assuming, maybe is what we used back?
Honestly, the actual setup hasn't changed too much. I'm still using this giant 16-channel Euro-Rack Behringer mixer. that I got because I also have a comedy rock band. So I got this for recording and for rehearsal and stuff like that. So I'm still using that mixer to this day. Microphones have changed. But again, I came to it with having a lot of gear already from being in a band. So having decent microphones and having a computer for recording and a multi-channel interface was all stuff I already had. So it was pretty easy to transition into podcasting.
Nice. And so was it right from the get-go, two or however many people happened to come on, people in the room, as opposed to, like I was saying, you know, sort of the typical stuff these days is the Skype and never actually seeing each other and that kind of thing. What was your initial sort of run of episodes like?
Well, it was always three people. It was Jared, myself, and Adam, who is not here right now. And I think the ultimate goal, I mean, we sort of set some standards from the beginning. And what we wanted to do was have a show that was very professional sounding. I mean, the idea was, let's mimic what a radio show would do. And because Jared had the gear, that really drove us in terms creatively from day one. Now, when we first started, we had a lot of pre-planned bits and little comedy things. And I think we quickly realized, A, we're not comedy writers. and B, that takes a lot of time to do.
Yeah,
and
we spent the first couple of months before even doing our first episode just writing. Yeah. Trying to write, at least.
Yeah.
I mean, the act of writing happened. Whether any of it was any good is up for debate. Yeah.
and so that sort of carried through all the way to episode 192. That's always been a part of what we are. I think over time we've learned, just like in terms of the technical process, we've learned to streamline what we do and stick to our strengths and you know, find a way to make a really good sounding, fun show. But not have to put, you know, 5-6 hours a day into it. Like it felt like we were doing that back in the mid 2000s. So
long ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you you said that you have another guest or another co-host as well.
Mm-hmm.
He's also in the room with you. Like that's, I keep hammering on this as if it's some unique thing. Obviously it's been done for
yeah,
done
we
a lot.
Have, it's almost like a radio station setup. If you look at us, we have a table, a couple mics on it for Shane and Adam with the, you know, the boom arms. And I'm off in the corner with the computer and my microphone. But yeah, we're all in the same space for the most part.
And I would say 99% of the time, you know, at least, especially early in the Scopes history, people would come into the studio. I mean, we treat it like a studio. If we put on game shows or things like that or guests, they would be sitting right next to us and we'll be looking at them. That's changed, you know, recently, obviously, with the you know, technological advances. It's just, you know, you can talk to anybody anywhere at any time, and the sound quality, if they have a decent mic, can be as good as what we're all doing right now. But yeah, the energy you get from having people near you and being able to look them in the eye, and you know, especially when you're trying to do comedy type things, like I talk about that like we're stand-up comedians, because we're really not. but you, when you're trying to develop a rhythm of what the show is, I think it's a lot easier to look at Jared or look at Adam and, you know, give a wink and a nod and say, okay, this is where I'm going to jump in. When you're scattered across the country talking over each other and stuff like that, you just miss some of that, those visual and verbal cues that you can't get having a studio
Shane,
set up.
Shane can look at me and see that I'm ready to pounce with a really bad joke.
Well, that's what I can definitely feel that in terms of compared to other conversations I've had with multiple guests, I guess, or whatever, multiple hosts of other shows where there's just that Skype gap or whatever that you have to mentally accommodate as you're talking and think about. Whereas definitely talking with you guys already, I can feel that there's a different vibe or whatever, a flow of the conversation between you two, which is, yeah, it's kind of fun and can definitely see the appeal of trying that and then perhaps the motivation to, you know, clean up the basement studio or the office or wherever you happen to somebody happens to record to invite a guest in is worth trying out anyways, just to experiment with. So
it helps that Shane is 3 minutes away from me.
Yeah,
I mean, right. We're very close.
We have a lot of weird convenience going on.
If one of us lived across town, it may not be the same show that it is. Yeah. So
right,
and it doesn't hurt that Jared and I have known each other for far too long. So you know, the shorthand that we have with each other is pretty ingrained at this point in our lives.
Yeah, and that's definitely a blessing or whatever, I guess, depends on the day.
Yeah.
It can get a little too inside baseball at times.
Yeah.
So,
But I know that's often I've proposed that to other friends who podcast in the city here, and it often it's like, well, I could come over there, but then I have to put on clothes and get out of my pajamas, and you know, why would I bother doing that? And it's cold, you know, it's winter's coming and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, good on you guys for doing that. Talk to me a bit about, because I watched some of the YouTube. You publish audio podcasts, obviously, mm-hmm. but also you publish a video feed as well. I don't know if every episode necessarily. I didn't click through all 193 episodes and when that maybe started. But talk to me a bit about, we'll get into the audio stuff, but the YouTube angle is kind of interesting. We just experimented a little bit with that on another show here in Good Stuff, just doing a purely, like, take the audio, add a few video titles to it, and throw it on YouTube just as a little experiment of how long that would take. We're not doing full video feeds yet. But yeah, talk to me a bit about your strategy and sort of why you're using the YouTube stuff as well.
Oh, big word there, strategy.
yeah.
The YouTube thing started just over a year ago. I think it was August of last year when I started posting them. And really, it's just, I'm a big consumer of YouTube. And so I just sort of figured that, you know, this is an area where there might be a potential for growth as far as growing the audience. I'm sure you've discovered that with audio podcasting, it's really hard to get kind of organic people finding you organically. Mm-hmm. And I think YouTube, while there's so much content out there, I think there's at least a shot that if you name your thing stuff right and tag it right and have relevant content, that you might have people kind of land on you randomly, and maybe they like what they see and they stick around and subscribe. So the growth hasn't been as great as I would like it to be, but you know, it's something we're still working at. And, we post our full episodes up there, with, multiple cameras. I started doing multi-camera edits and then realized that for the view numbers we were getting, it wasn't worth the time. So right now it's still just I don't know what you call it, a three up, three people, you know, three different talking heads together on screen.
Right.
But I think what kind of helps just drive our traffic is we've been doing our movie reviews. And I'm hoping that that's the sort of content that people will find if they're searching for a review for a movie. They'll see that and they'll go, oh, they've got a whole channel full of content that's pop culture related that might be interesting to me. So that's sort of my thinking on the YouTube side.
Right, and that's, I noticed, yeah, you had, because the most recent episode, or whatever you want to call it, on the actual website is actually just a movie review, which isn't, is that also going audio feed into the, audio fed, what's the word?
Yep.
Into the show on iTunes or whatever, but just the audio version, it would go there.
Yep, we'll just take the audio and put that out as an audio podcast.
Right.
And yeah, and that's just recorded in the car with a camera microphone.
Yeah, which I think that's, I was kind of, I didn't watch the Birdman one because I haven't watched the movie, so I didn't want to have it be spoiled.
Go see it.
I know, that's, I actually had full plans to go see it, and it wasn't actually playing here yet where we live for some reason. Theater hadn't got it yet. So I convinced friends to see it because they were like, well, that sounds weird. Why would I want to see that? And then.
It's weird. There's no doubt about it, but you'll love it.
Maybe it's probably best. The friends I didn't go with might have not enjoyed it. But anyways, I'll watch the review after I watch it.
Those are probably the same friends that don't want to put on their PJs and come over and podcast with you in the same room. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. All good reasons, healthy reasons not to. But yeah, I like that idea of sort of, you know, taking the quote unquote, air quotes, brand or whatever that you have, but breaking it to different chunks and posting it elsewhere. And I noticed you're using Tumblr and kind of the, I've tried that too over the years of just a bit of a scattershot approach of like trying to just get your stuff out there, not being locked into just iTunes as being the only be all end all and trying to bring in audience listeners, viewers or whatever from different ways. And the YouTube idea, I think it's funny because it feels like every year or so there's the, like, this is the year for video on the internet. And then just looking actually at your homepage or at your sites, you had, which probably, I'm guessing probably hasn't been updated in a while, but there's a links page. And some of it has been updated, but I know some of the links to like recommended podcasts.
Oh, sure.
Brought me back a few years, which is like Tiki Bar TV and
make a note, Jared, update those links.
Yeah. there's definitely a website refresh.
Which is fair.
I don't.
Yeah. You're a podcast. You're not a link blog or whatever. That's fine. Yeah. But it just was, and then it sort of sent me down a rabbit trail of going to like a Dig Nation episode and remembering sort of Revision 3, which I think is still around, but how that was like, okay, now video is coming and we're here and, you know, Revision 3 is going, but then obviously that's kind of, it's morphed and it's still there, but it's definitely not the way it was. And just how, Yeah, it feels like video is always poised for something, but nobody quite knows what. And
it's poised for video game commentary. That's what it's poised exactly. for. Those are the biggest channels out there right now.
That's true. Yeah, Twitch, et cetera. Yeah. So, but have you gotten any sort of like, aside from just numbers and, you know, obviously you can, anybody can look at your views and things like that on YouTube, but as far as tangible kind of community benefits, listener benefits that you've been able to sort of figure out from doing YouTube? Is it tough to?
I wouldn't say that I've drawn any real significant conclusions yet. You know, I mean, I'll admit to being sort of disappointed in the results. And I think part of it is we've sort of struggled to come up with a package for our content that's a little bit more easy to digest, which is where I think the reviews fit better. You know, they're usually, you know, 10 to 15 minutes. It's a little easier for someone to sit down and watch that versus a 45 minute to an hour long episode, which, you know, someone sees that time come up and it's a little daunting for them just to go, oh, I'm just going to sample this and see what it's about, especially when they don't really know us. So I've tried to think about some ideas of how to sort of carve out the program that we're doing now into a little more digestible pieces. And a lot of it's just, you know, you gotta budget the time for it. And, you know, it's a little chicken and the egg. It's like, I don't want to spend the time on it when we don't have that great of subscriber count or view count, but then how do we get the subscriber count and view count if I don't spend the time on it? So what do you do?
Yeah, exactly.
That's sort of been the, I don't want to say the bane of our show, but we've always struggled with length. I mean, the idea of the show being a morning radio show and letting it go and be organic has always been at the, you know, the center of what we do. But, you know, early shows, we could go for an hour and a half. We could go for 2 hours sometimes. So, you know, we're always working to make it shorter, make it tighter. And then, you know, nowadays, you know, if you get someone that watches a 5 minute video on YouTube, that's a success. And, you know, the shortest bits that we would have up there from our show would be a half hour long usually. So it's always trying to find that balance and figuring out what people are going to realistically digest without, you know, turning away and going to some other video game clip, as Jared would say. Yeah. But we also want to be true to ourselves. I mean, for me, I think I do the show because I like hanging out with Jared. I like hanging out with Adam. And if I don't find pleasure in what we're doing, then I wouldn't want to do it. So it's always a work in progress. There's always a transformational aspect to what we do. It's changed over time. It's just probably a little bit more glacier paced at some point here.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, having done it for as long as you have, I'm sure you've sort of seen the ebb and flow, I guess, of like listener numbers and overall interest in podcasting. There's always every couple of years, there's the new article from which I think the latest one was New York Times or somebody had like, now podcasts are back because there's a popular podcast from NPR, you know, like that's the sort of latest.
Yeah, metric. And we're over here screaming, hey, we've been here the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. So the rest of us keep plugging along. But I can certainly identify with the idea, like what you're talking about with YouTube, is just the fun of playing around with that stuff. Right? Whether you get listeners or not, it's still just, I'm sure you get into this a bit, partly because obviously you love talk, but also just tech and that goes along with that.
And absolutely. And it's also YouTube is way more shareable than an audio episode of a podcast ever is. Because everyone knows how to use YouTube. And you can send them a link and they can play it and then go, oh, so this is what you've been doing in your basement for 6 years. I get it.
It hasn't all been a waste.
It's always been trouble in the past trying to get friends and family who aren't maybe as tech savvy or, you know, aren't really going to listen to podcasts to check out your show. But just having it on YouTube sort of lowers that barrier. So at least for that, I think it's a win.
Sure.
Yeah, and the one thing that I think people often forget about YouTube is this, like thinking of it as a MP3 player, a glorified MP3 player that you can use to host your podcast with. And like
Absolutely.
You said, it's not that somebody's going to sit and watch it necessarily, but having the built-in ability to, like you said, sharing a link easily on a platform people understand, but also the ability to hotlink or direct link or whatever to a time code. It's built right into the player now, so anybody can just right-click and say, this is a part where Shane said something really stupid or whatever and you know, link to it and debate or whatever.
I saw Shane and write in Jared. I'm the one I've got the trademark on the stupid thing.
Okay. But and use it that way and even if nothing else, if you're starting out podcasting as an easy way to experiment with the medium and whether you put your video, your face up there or not or whatever, just as a way to experiment with the medium and on a free hosting platform basically. And with built-in subscribe ability and all that kind of stuff, Absolutely. The tools that they have, are pretty good. But yeah, it still is tough to sort of get over that hump of like worthwhileness to put in the kind of work you guys are doing. So when you're talking about producing a video for YouTube that you guys are doing, I know it's like great camera quality, video quality is great. Obviously, like you said, it's a little easier for you when you got everybody in the same room. But what's just talk me through the setup that you have in studio for working from the video side, then we'll talk audio in a minute.
Okay. So initially we started out using just Microsoft webcams, but I could never get the stability that I wanted. Plugging multiple webcams into the computer and trying to get them all recorded, it just too much system overhead for the computer I was using probably. So eventually I just had the idea of, let's see if I can find some cheap camcorders. And I ended up finding refurbs from Canon, like $97 each. They were super, super cheap for HD camcorders, which was great because I already had one. So I only needed to buy two more. And I have three Canon Vixia HD camcorders just on little tabletop stands pointed at all of us. And I just hit record on all of them at the beginning of the show. And then I have in the sound app that I use for triggering sounds, I just have a kind of a sync tone that I'll play through the speakers so that it will record on all of the cameras and also into the DAW. So I have kind of an audio sync point. And that way I can sync up all the cameras. And that's really it for video. I've got some lights placed around the room to try to light it a little better. Just a basic black background, which is something I've always wanted to sort of upgrade. But that requires a whole building a set.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not quite there yet. And then I'll bring the footage into Adobe Premiere. And I'll just build a multi-track sequence with all the cameras in there. I'll sync them up. And I have a template that I use that where I kind of scale them down to the right size. And I apply the little, you know, mask over the top or the mat over the top to get the three talking heads in a box thing and throw in some titles where I need them to. And there you go. That's pretty much it for the video side.
And are you taking the audio, like your audio that you're recording into your DAW? Yep. You said the Behringer mixer you're using and stuff. So you're taking that out and sort of pasting over, deleting the audio from the cameras.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't use any of the camera audio. It's only there for sync purposes.
Yeah.
I'll do the post-production on the audio side, and then I'll bring that audio file into Premiere and use that as the master audio.
So would you say just for someone ballparking here, as far as the time, because you're not doing a lot of editing video content throughout the course of a show, right? You're not adding titles.
No, we're what you'd call a live to tape, pretty much. So we don't really do any editing within the show itself. And I try to keep titles to the minimum. I mean, I have it pretty streamlined now as far as what I do. I have, you know, templates, and I just do transparent pings out of Photoshop for my titles and just whip up what I need, export them, and then I just drop them into the right spot.
Yeah. So would you say it's like an extra 2 hours to do the video part of it?
Actual production time or post-production time in Premiere with me actively doing something is probably an hour per episode, maybe. There's a whole step of copying footage off of the SD cards that takes, you know, about an hour because it's a lot of footage.
Right.
The export takes a long time because it's doing a lot of scaling. So that per episode will take a couple hours to export, but you know, that's the sort of thing you just set it and walk away.
Right. So. Yeah. So that's, yeah, just to give it up people an idea, I guess.
It's significant in relation to how much post-production on the audio side is, which can be as little as 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not a minor jump, but as long as I'm not doing a bunch of camera switching, it's not too bad.
How long did it take you when you started doing this? Because I know that was always an effort for you to get it to the point where you could get it to this hour per show.
I mean, the early attempts at it were 3 or 4 hours sometimes. It was very frustrating. And part of that was I was dealing with those webcams, which had sometimes terrible audio sync. And so I would get 20 minutes into the show and suddenly the lip sync is way off and I'd have to try to correct for it. And it was so, so frustrating, which was part of the reason I wanted to drop those webcams altogether and just go with something that was reliable and dedicated to a single purpose, acquiring video.
Yeah.
So that's why I went with the camcorders.
Which is nice. I mean, those are obviously the sort of memory storage based, like they're not tape based, obviously that would be even more painful.
Yeah. Just SD cards. You just pop the card up, pop it in your computer. And I can copy the footage over and ready to go.
Yeah, and that's, I think, something that people maybe underestimate. I guess the value of having a camera that's not hardwired and recording live to a computer at any moment, because
it doesn't. It's not. We've had, like, early on in our attempts, sometimes the computer would crash.
Yeah,
and you just have no video for that chunk of the show until you had a break where you could stop and reboot the computer. So yeah, I wanted something that was dedicated to one task and was pretty much not going to fail. So.
And because you're not doing any sort of live video stream or anything, Google Hangout type thing or whatever with the show.
No,
right?
It's something we've played with in the past, but yeah. Not currently.
Yeah. Yeah, that's neat. Okay, so flipping back around. Actually, we'll cover audio in a second. I just want to take a break to thank my first sponsor for this episode, which is Campaign Monitor, which we talk a lot about here at Good Stuff. Campaign Monitor makes it fun and easy and beautiful to send out email campaigns to potential customers. You can get up and running with a responsive email template in about 60 seconds. We use it here at Good Stuff, which you can sign up for our newsletter, goodstuff.fm/newsletter, where I actually send out the weekly-ish. Last couple of weeks, it hasn't been weekly, so my apologies. But I send out a weekly newsletter to listeners and Good Stuff folks about shows and updates on what's going on behind the scenes and things like that. And Campaign Monitor makes it super easy to do that. They've got a great iOS app called Monitor that you can take a look at on your phone, your iOS device of choice, and obviously monitor your email newsletter as it gets sent out, as people subscribe, or maybe hopefully not, but unsubscribe and get details on what's going on with your email newsletter lists. So if you could go to check out campaignmonitor.com, get started today. You can visit also canvas.cm. to check out their template builder. Awesome stuff. Thanks to Campaign Monitor for supporting Good Stuff and Show Me Your Mic. So audio side of things, you mentioned a Behringer mixer that you've had mm-hmm. for a while. Going out from that, I guess, what are the various mics and stuff and gear that you're using to get the audio?
So when we first started, I sort of just had a hodgepodge of large diaphragm condenser microphones that we used. Three different models. Found ones that worked good on everyone's voices, and we rolled with that. But I've sort of now standardized. I have three Heil PR781 microphones. And this is actually marketed as a ham radio microphone. And I'm trying to remember now how I found it. It must have been a YouTube video. But it's in their PR line. It has a very similar element to like the PR40 or the PR30. It's not as good, obviously, but it's significantly cheaper. I think I got them, a couple of them I got used on eBay for $100 each, and then one of them I bought new for $140. So you're looking at, you know, half the price of a PR40, maybe more than that, mm-hmm. For a similar but not quite as good of a sound quality, in my opinion. But yeah. Hey, look it up. I think it's one of those bank. They even market it on the box. It says for ham radio and podcasting. So
oh, there you go.
I don't know why they're not marketing it more towards that, but seems to work for me. And it gets rid of a lot of spill in the room. Like we'd have, since we're so close with the large diaphragm condensers, we'd get a lot of, you know, leakage from other people talking. And I think that having these diaphragm, these dynamic microphones helped clean that up.
Yeah, that was my question, or my next question was going to be about recording a bunch of folks in a room. And you obviously, you said you had audio experience from bands and stuff in the past,
sure.
So you'd have a bit of familiarity with that. But that's something I know I've come up against with just someone shouting or talking or whatever in the room and dealing with that mm-hmm. and sort of the bit of delay or whatever that sometimes happens with a mix. If you get a bit of bleed or leakage, I guess, from what a terrible word.
I'm so, enjoying it every time you say it.
A little bleed and leakage. Might want to see a doctor.
Yeah, exactly. which, yeah, that's actually, I think, in the 57 episodes now of Show Me Your Mic, I think that's the first PR781 I've heard somebody mention.
Yeah, I don't know of anyone else who uses it. So, but hey, if you're looking for a good dynamic microphone, maybe take a look at it.
Yeah, and especially, like you said, it's one thing if you were just buying one mic for yourself, like I'd had to or whatever. It's a little easier to stomach the PR40 line, but then, yeah, if you're trying to outfit three or four or whatever folks, that's where it gets a little more expensive for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you're obviously going all those into your multi-channel mixer.
Yep.
The model numbers.
It's the Eurorack MX3242X discontinued. Maybe you find it on eBay. I don't know.
Yeah.
But this has, you know, lots of inputs, lots of outputs. It serves me well for, you know, recording music, recording podcasting, all kinds of things. So So all the microphones go into that, and then all of the microphones have inserts where I'm using compression on all the mic channels. I have a pair of DBX 266 XL compressors, just stereo compressors. I don't even know what settings I'm using on them, but that, so that gives you compression right into the recording, and it also has a noise gate. So that also helps to cut down on some of the bleed. If somebody decides to shout, it might still show up, but the combination of the microphones with their off-axis rejection and the compression with the noise gate really keeps it nice and clean.
Do you know enough on the DBX, or maybe I'm forgetting the model number two. I thought there was a 286 compressor.
There is a 286. I think that's more of a channel strip, which would have compression and other like stuff into it. But yeah, that's similar.
Gotcha, yeah.
The 266 is their budget line. And I think the XL is discontinued now, but they have a
it's 286.
Comparable, like an XS or something.
Yeah. Both are definitely, especially I would guess, I'm assuming that the 781.
Yep.
Just like the PR40, probably a little gain hungry and needs something to sort of give it some jam, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got the gain fairly well cranked on the board, so.
Mm-hmm. And then from there, you're going into what audio recording software are you using for?
Everything. So I have some subgroups and direct outs going into a Focusrite Sapphire Pro 40 8-channel recording interface.
Mm.
So that gives me discrete channels on all the voices and then a stereo mix for the all of the computer audio. And I was using GarageBand for years to record. And I just decided to move over to Adobe Audition recently, and that's been working out pretty well. I don't know. I like it. I use Audition for the post production on the show or on the audio, and I use Adobe products for the editing. So I figured I'd just keep it all Adobe.
Yeah, which probably I'm assuming probably the Creative Cloud benefit.
Actually, I'm still back on CS6. I haven't been willing to go up to the cloud yet, and I probably won't until the Mac OS update breaks it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I just want to go back a second because you mentioned going into a Focusrite mix. Which input or which device, which model do you have of that?
The Sapphire Pro 40. It's an FireWire 8-channel interface.
You may have said that. I was typing, trying to keep up to go to the chain. But so is that because the Behringer mixer is not a... doesn't have a digital audio input? Or
it does not. It's just an analog mixer, but it has direct outs on every channel and also, the subgroups. So mm-hmm. I have a lot of routing flexibility.
Yeah, which is neat. And that probably takes care of, I would guess, the handling a headphone mix or...
Oh, yep. I have that going out too. I have just a Behringer headphone amp.
Right.
That gives me enough gain for everyone.
Which that's another one. Those one of those little things.
Shane's looking at me like, "What are you talking about?"
You actually do a lot of work for this show.
I do.
For you,
you're vastly underappreciated part of the show. Well,
most of this is, it's dialed in, and I don't have to deal with it anymore. But
yeah, but the headphone amp is a funny little one that I think most people maybe wouldn't think of when they're booking, say, somebody to come into their studio, especially if you're accounting for somebody bringing in somebody on Skype or something like that.
Yeah.
In addition to an in-room guest, where you can't do it. Like, I'm looking at my Mackie mixer, which is a $800 or $1,000 mixer. There isn't like a simple way to just allow another person to just plug in a set of headphones, and having something, you can get a splitter, but then the feed is weakened or audio signal is weakened, obviously, mm-hmm. and something like a headphone amp mixer, I forget what they're called, but which aren't that expensive, $60 or something, I think.
Yeah, I'm wary of the cheap ones. I bought a cheap one first, and I never got enough gain out of it. If you got to a loud volume, it distorted. So I ended up buying the Behringer rack mount, and that has plenty of gain. And then it also feeds a nice hot signal out to the cheaper headphone amp, which is over on the table. And they seem to get enough gain out of that now. So
keeps the guests happy, mm-hmm. the co-hosts happy, I guess.
If I may add to the technical conversation, mm-hmm. I want to point out Jared has between 10 and 1,000 cables coming out of his mixing board.
So, well, yeah.
Or maybe they're going in. I don't know. But looking at it. There's a lot of action back there.
They're going
so
in and out, Shane.
It's pretty exciting.
You just plug one cable into each ear, I think is how
that's
it works.
It.
And put the other one in your nose and you're good to go.
Yeah, that's probably how I would have done it.
Well, that is the fun of going back to what we're saying with YouTube too, is like there's probably, well, there is like cheap, simpler, or easier ways sometimes to do some of this stuff, but half of the fun sometimes is just like with Lego, like building the stuff mm-hmm. yourself and figuring out how to route things. And then you end up getting frustrated because there's some static from somewhere and you don't really know where. And
so. I discovered that if my bedroom light upstairs gets flicked on, it introduces a nice 60 cycle hum.
See,
so I for months I was trying to figure out, where is this hum coming from? It would be intermittent, and it would just, one day I was like, hum came on. So I ran upstairs and like, what's going on? And my girlfriend had turned the bedroom light on. I'm like, that's it. I found the source.
And he kicked her out and she's never been seen since.
Yeah, it's a sad tale. I don't like to talk about it.
No lights upstairs when we're recording.
Yes, okay. I actually taped the light switch so it can't be turned on.
Nice. all right, look around your studio there. I'm trying to think if there's anything I'm forgetting of that's worth discussing. There's a lot of moving parts, as you said,
yeah,
going
but
on.
It's pretty much microphone into mixer with some compression into a recording interface into your software. And like I said, we're live to tape, so it's, I get the multi-tracks in case I need to fix anything later. But honestly, I may do some slight balancing on the vocal channels, or if I have for some reason the fader down on the mixer for the computer sounds too low, I'll boost that up and then I'll just, you know, print it out to a stereo track and then I'll bring it back in and do my post-processing.
And you mentioned computer tracks, so you have some yep. another channel of audio from, do you type pipe in just your computer audio, or each person sort of gets to also mess with the show by sending weird audio sounds to the...
we haven't quite got to that yet. It's just my computer. So the computer that also it's recording also is used to play back any sound files. I use the Soundboard app, Ambrosia Software, I think makes it.
Yeah.
A lot of podcasters use it, and I wish they would update it.
Yeah.
But I use that to trigger all of the various, you know, show bumpers and sound effects and whatever else we want to play during the show. And that comes out via analog out of the stereo out of the Sapphire into two channels on the mixer, so I can control the volume relative to everything else. And then that gets piped back into the recording interface into its own stereo track in Audition. So very, very kind of analog. I'm not doing any sort of audio hijacking in the box to capture sound. Even for Skype, I'm using a separate computer for that.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm bringing the audio in and then sending a mix minus back out.
Yeah, which listeners of the show will know my aversion to using SoundFlower and stuff purely because it just, my brain hurts when I try to use it. It's not that it's not quality or isn't capable of some of that yeah. stuff. It's just I need to see the cable going from A to B so I can remember what's mm-hmm. going where.
Mm-hmm.
And when I undo it all, it still is able to get put back together relatively easy.
Completely agree on that. SoundFlower is a great tool, but I can't always get it right.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I think, comes down to the cost of setting up some of that stuff, of buying some of that gear, besides the fun, geeky fun of having that hardware, the gear in your house or whatever in your studio, the ease of leaving it set up and having it maintained, or putting tape or whatever on the cable so you remember what goes where if you have to dismantle it each time, to me was worth the expenditure versus having to hope and pray that OS X would allow me to do what I needed to do each time and then still do my other work on the computer as well if I happen to do things. So
mm-hmm.
for your mileage may vary out there, listener, podcaster, person, but that's just what works for me. So
yeah, it's a bit of a capital expenditure to get all of this outboard stuff, but you know, the ease of use is great.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to think now, you're in the room, you've got the cameras recording each other, your mm-hmm. mics are going, or recording your audio, obviously. Anything else that we're, I don't think, obviously you export out of Audition into a MP3 or whatever and up to iTunes, et cetera, and out to the internet.
Yep.
You're using other stuff like, which this isn't that uncommon to say this, but Facebook, Tumblr, Google+, besides YouTube and stuff. What's any of those platforms that have jumped out at you as like, this has been a great experiment in sort of porting our content, as it were, over there, or it's all a bit kind of still mishmashy? And that's my experience anyways, is kind
yeah.
of a bit of a hit and miss with some of the other platforms to, as far as whether it's worth it.
I like having, I mean, it pays to sort of just be present on all the networks. Like for Tumblr, I'm trying to use that as a blog about pop culture related stuff in the hopes that that will attract people who would be interested in our content. So maybe they'll see a post about the next Avengers movie and they'll go, oh, hey, they have a podcast too. Maybe I'll listen. You know, Twitter is, you just throw a bunch of stuff at the wall and hope that somebody takes notice. The one thing that has, and it's small time, but we've had the most engagement, I think, with our own Facebook group. somebody suggested that we start a group a year or so ago. And that's really where we have a lot of our comments come from, is people commenting in the group. So it's a small group of people who are there, but it's your most dedicated people, people mm-hmm. who are actively listening and engaging with the show. So, you know, if nothing else, that's probably the best tool that we have. I mean, we have a Facebook page too, but I mean, we could talk an hour about how they've ruined how many people actually see your posts on that. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
I'm not a fan of Facebook right now. So.
Understandable. And that is a nice little end around or whatever, as far as using groups instead of a page and how that can sometimes help in getting your show or your content in general or whatever to the actual people who want to hear it a little easier, see it a little easier, whatever. But Facebook has always been kind of this weird animal for podcasts. I've seen folks, some folks like Ray Ortega, who does a podcast about podcasting as well, posts a bit about having success with one of his shows, I think his sort of day job show, but on Facebook. And it just depends probably on the dynamic and the crowd that you're speaking to and audience that you draw. But it's never been very strong in terms of numbers and even sort of engagement or whatever for a lot of the shows that we do here. Good stuff too. So, but again, like you said before, chicken and egg thing of, well, maybe we're not putting enough effort into it. So who knows?
I think one of the great things, or one of the things that would help us, is if we would have some sort of time machine where we could go back to the age of 20, where we could sink as much time as we needed into promoting and advancing our show. I mean, you just get to the point now where, you know, we have real life that sort of takes precedence. And unfortunately, I don't help Jared a lot with a lot of the social media stuff. So he's sort of left to his own devices. But I think if all three of us would actually have the time or desire and effort to put that in there, maybe it might be a little different. But it sort of is.
You got to be hitting it hard from day one.
Yeah, you really just have to push it, push it, push it, push it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's definitely you can see the people who do have success there, it's because that's where they put time and effort into as well. So certainly worth doing if you're young, dumb, don't have kids.
Yeah.
Not necessarily dumb, that's disparaging, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
All right, well, in wrapping up, one of the things I ask folks is the podcast that you are listening to these days and what apps you're listening to it on. So while I thank our second sponsor, I don't know if you need to pull out your app device of your podcast tape player of choice. Wouldn't it be crazy if we had to all download or mail out tapes to listen to podcasts? Anyways, and we'll cover that in a second after I just thank our second sponsor, which is new to Good Stuff this month. Mandrill is a scalable, reliable, and secure email infrastructure service trusted by more than 300,000 customers. It's easy to set up and integrate with your existing apps, and it's really fast, too. With servers all over the world, Mandrill can deliver your email in milliseconds. They've got detailed delivery reports, advanced analytics, a friendly interface for a great service. It's for if you know what about sending email from an app or from a website, Mandrill is basically a service that takes over for you. Instead of using a built-in server-based email client or email server to send out your emails from, say, WordPress or a custom app you've developed. I use it for my clients a lot rather than WordPress's built-in email sending service, which is fairly unreliable, either getting caught in spam or just doesn't send properly. Mandrill has a really great WordPress plugin. Throw in your WordPress site. You don't have to know any sort of special codes and stuff. You just have to look for a little API key in your Mandrill account and paste that in, and it takes care of the rest of it. And then you get great analytics on the emails that you're sending out to clients or customers or users of your WordPress installation. You can sign up with promo code GOODSTUFF and you'll receive 50,000 free email sends per month for your first 6 months of service. So if you go over to mandrillapp.com, you can get started today. My thanks to Mandrill for sponsoring and supporting Good Stuff and Show Me Your Mic. All right, I don't know who wants to go first.
I've talked a lot. I'll let Shane go first.
Sure.
It might be a short conversation here. So as we were talking about earlier, I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, believe it or not. It's just my life doesn't allow for that. It's difficult. But the one that I do listen to regularly, which is by far my favorite, is Bullseye with Jesse Thorne. Oh, and the reason why I like him, And Jared and I debate a little bit on him because he sometimes feels he's maybe a bit too, I don't know, calculated, precious. Those are the words you sometimes use, or at least one of them.
Earnest.
Earnest.
I do like him, though.
He is an excellent interviewer. He puts a lot of time into research, and it's something that I really respect. So he'll go in your interview, and he will ask questions that these people have never heard before. And it's always fun on that particular show when he surprises them, and they'll be like, wow, no one's ever asked me that question. That's an album I did 20 years ago, and you're really the only person that's really ever mentioned that other than my friends or my mom or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the format in which he does that is so slick, and his presence and the way he presents himself is impressive to me. It's something that I look up to as a podcasting guy. And then I also listen to a lot of talk radio, believe it or not. I mean, for me, it's about telling a story and interacting with the people that are around me, as your listeners can tell by listening to this interview. Jared is the technical side of the show. And so I don't really know a lot of that stuff. So I have to add and contribute on the creative side and the content side. So that's sort of where I come in. And my inspiration is by listening to like Howard Stern, for instance, who, you know, we could debate what you think of him, but in terms of interviewing, there probably isn't anyone better out there. And there's a local guy that's been on our show a few times. His name is Ron Gerber. He does a show called Crap from the Past, which is it's essentially a graduate level course in a conversation about pop music from, you know, the 60s, 70s, 80s and 90s, mostly 80s and 90s. But it's just fascinating how he can weave a tale around music. And it's something that makes me want to go back to and listen over and over again. So that's where my inspiration comes from. And I listen to my podcast just on the default iPhone podcast app.
Podcast app, yeah.
Nice. That's what I listen to. So. Yeah. So there you go, Jared.
Cool.
Over to you.
Over to me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you mentioned Jesse Thorne. I will mention that I listen to his Jordan Jesse Go podcast, what he does with his friend Jordan Morris. Crazy, off the wall, very improvisational, in the moment style comedy, which I really enjoy. Vulgar at times, but you know, I don't mind that. I also listen to The Nerdist. I think he's also another, I would put him in the upper echelon of great interviewers. He gets a chance to do a lot of long form stuff, which is really, 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 really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I've got your usual slew of tech podcasts that I think, you know, you said I'm the tech guy, so obviously I'm into that stuff.
Didn't mean to pigeonhole you, so I mean, you're a multifaceted guy, you're a renaissance, but.
I listen to Twit and MacBreak Weekly. Because those are relevant to my interests. Another one that I've listened to recently that I also talked about on our show is Hello Internet. I don't know if you're familiar with CGP Grey and Brady Heron. They're both they're good YouTubers. I'm trying to find the word. They're popular. They have more than a million subscribers.
Found it. That's the word.
Right. But they just do a conversation where they talk about what it's like to be, what started out as what it's like to be, you know, a YouTuber and how you manage that and what the expectations are. And now it's just sort of evolved into them, two guys having a conversation about whatever they're interested in. And I find that endlessly fascinating. And then I also do a lot of web development, web design stuff. So I have a few of those that I listen to. But my favorite is Shop Talk with Chris Coyer, which is how I found Show Me Your Mic. Because
Oh, nice.
You did an interview with Chris Coyer. I'm like, oh, wait, there's this show where he talks to podcasters about podcasting. This seems like something I would be interested in.
Yeah.
And I've been a subscriber ever since. So. Other than that, there are a few like news info history type podcasts that I listen to. Dan Carlin does too. He does Common Sense, which is sort of a current events topic, a discussion show where he talks about something that's going on, and sort of applies his history buff, mentality to it and sort of analyzing how things are going today through the lens of history. And then he also does Hardcore History, which is just a fantastic in-depth look at major historical events. It takes a long time for him to produce them, but they're definitely worth the wait every time.
Nice.
I think that's it. And I also use just the podcast app, although I'm getting very frustrated with it. It stopped downloading automatically recently. I have to actually go in once a day and tell it to download stuff. So
really?
I'm looking at other solutions. Downcast, maybe. Is it Opencast? No.
Overcast is
one. Overcast, that's the one. That's kind of the new hotness in iOS podcasting these days. So
yeah,
maybe I'll give them a try.
Yeah, and Pocket Cast is another one I'd recommend. If you're look, that's one I use. That's my app of choice. I've tried Overcast as well, and I came back to Pocket Cast. I don't know why exactly. Maybe it was just because I was cheap and didn't want to pay for the full version right now of Overcast.
Are there any of them that will just take your current iTunes subscriptions and import them? Because that's sort of a barrier for me.
Yeah, I don't know if the iTunes app exports what they need is like the OPML file.
Yeah.
And all the other apps are great, like Overcast and Pocket Cast work great as far as allowing you to export and then imports and all that kind of stuff and move back and forth very easily within your iOS device. No, you don't have to do anything with the computer.
Sure.
But I don't know if I would. My hunch is Apple wouldn't worry about that.
Probably not.
I don't know why I have that hunch, but even in Overcast, actually in the about section of the app or something, he's got a list of, you know, if this app isn't good for you, try these other ones, because, you know, he's just trying to promote podcasting in general. So it's nice. Nice when they play together like that. So
yeah, indeed.
Cool. Well, that's a good list of shows and things that folks might want to check out. So actually, Shop Talk Show, since you mentioned that, it was Dave Rupert was the guest number one on Show Me Your Mic way back when I first started. He was the
Back and listened to that one.
Yeah, willing to be the guinea pig for a show that may or may not continue. And so much thanks to him. But yeah, that's a great, great show. And also great users of the Soundboard app.
Oh, yes, quite a bit.
So cool. Well, where can folks find you guys on the internet besides obviously the Scope Show, but what are your other digits that you want to pass along?
Well, thescopeshow.com. We are The Scope Show on Twitter, The Scope Show on Tumblr, The Scope Show on YouTube, and strangely, just The Scope on Facebook.
It's an outlier.
One, I actually forgot to mention, you guys, I don't know if this is a new thing or how long you're also experimenting with Patreon. Or using
yes.
Patreon, right?
Patreon.com/The Scope Show. Yeah, right now we're still in the planning stages for the past, 8 months of getting some actual rewards planned. So, you know, some enticements to get people to sign up. But we do have a few subscribers and they're just contributing, you know, $1 or $3 an episode if you're my boss. you know, it's a little bit of way to get some money in there.
Yeah, it's great. I think that's a just another platform that can help anyways with making it a little easier rather than having to build your own sort of membership thing or suffer the frustration of PayPal and stuff like that, which is, end result is the money is in your pocket, which is great. But yeah, whereas Patreon makes it all kind of nice, easy, and actually fun to be a part of a community sort of donating and supporting each other and things like that. So
indeed.
I'm in the similar boat to you where I have a page set up. I've experimented a bit with it, played with it and set it up, but I haven't really invested the proper energy into it to really, evaluate fully. And, but I do thank the folks who are supporting me on there because it makes paying the bills a little easier. So as we all know. All right. Well, this has been a Show Me Your Mic episode 57. I'm iChris on Twitter. Show Me Your Mic is SMYM_FM on Twitter. You can visit goodstuff.fm for this show. All the links and stuff that we discussed will be at goodstuff.fm/SMYM/57. And there's lots of other great shows to check out on Good Stuff as well. If you're curious about needing some other podcasts to listen to, I won't list them all right now because you can go visit goodstuff.fm to see them, but plenty of variety of different shows that will tickle your fancy. So do we still say that? I don't know if we should.
You do, and that's all that matters.
We do now.
Yeah, exactly. We won't say bleed or leakage because those are bad words, but they might tickle your fancy. My thanks to you guys for joining me on Show Me Your Mic. I was going to say joining me on The Scope. Just ready to take over other shows now.
Wow.
And tune in next week. I have a guest and I forgot to make a note of who it is, so we'll just leave it as a secret. His first name is Jeremy. We'll leave it at that. Teaser for next week. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. Bye.